What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. As always, I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can find me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. Of course, you can also find our show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And by now, you guys should know the drill. If you appreciate what we do here, please do me a favor. Subscribe to us. Drop us some stars. Leave us a review. Share the podcast on all your social media feeds. I would sincerely appreciate it. So with, regrettably, right, the Rockets just lost to the Knicks, but they do have what will be probably the biggest game of the season against the Clippers coming up Thursday evening. And with that, I wanted to do kind of a two-part preview to this game. So the first part, and what we'll get to here in just a second, is going to be a preview of the game with the guys from Locked On Clippers, so Charles Mockler and William Updike. So we're going to talk to them in just one moment and get some kind of Clippers perspective headed into this game. And then we'll also do a second preview focusing a bit more on the Rockets angle of things with a very notable member of Rockets Twitter. So that should be a very fun interview, or maybe not interview, but fun podcast, because it's not really going to be an interview. It'll be a healthy back and forth, ideally. So, but without any further ado, we'll jump into that conversation that I had with the guys from over at Locked On Clippers, and hopefully you guys enjoy what they had to say. And you know, I think you will. We had a pretty good time with the crossover pod. So we'll jump straight to that right now.
What's going on, Rockets and Clipper Nation? We are very happy to be on this Locked On Rockets podcast. I'm positive Chuck Mockler.
I'm William the Opinion Updike, and we are joined by Jackson Gatlin. Thank you so much for being on.
Absolutely. Excited we could do this.
Yeah, we got to. This is a pretty intense. I mean, all of a sudden, you guys have a new lineup situation, Rockets, Clippers. How are you feeling going into this game, just like, you know, importance wise, I guess, or gravity of this game?
From a Rockets angle, it's kind of like they've gone from, you know, the biggest game of the season to the next biggest game of the season over and over now. You know, it's been a few games in a row. The Utah Jazz game that they just won, which kind of clinched them the season series against the Jazz, was definitely monumental because that, you know, got them the fourth seed. And now they're sitting, you know, just a game and a half or two games back, I want to say, of the Clippers right now. So this upcoming game becomes the next biggest game of the season, because if they want to fight for that second or third seed, they've got to get past the Clippers and they've got to get past the Nuggets. Unfortunately, they've already, you know, tied the season series with the Nuggets, so all that's left is to try and clinch the season series against the Clippers now.
Yeah, I'm so just excited for this one, because we talked about it a little bit before we started recording, but Doc said he's going to start playing Marcus Morris and Jermichael Green at the five more, which kind of seems like exactly what we have to do against you guys.
It's interesting because there have been some teams that have, you know, opted to not buy into matching the small ball lineup that the Rockets put out there on the court with PJ Tucker at the five, or now the newly acquired Jeff Green, you know, as the backup five, so that you can play five out basketball. But other teams have opted not to do that. So you saw, like, against the Lakers, who were unsuccessful in their attempts to use their size with JaVale McGee and Anthony Davis to try and dominate the Rockets inside. You saw them lose against the Rockets, but then, unfortunately, you see the Rockets come out, and maybe the loss against the Knicks isn't exactly small ball being exploited. There were a lot of issues in that game, lack of energy, lack of intensity for about two and a half, three quarters almost. But the Knicks did have a bigger team that were able to take advantage of the Rockets. So I'm not really sure if it's a good thing for the Clippers to try and go small or a bad thing.
I think looking at it from the Clippers perspective, to me, Ivica Zubac is like the wrong type of like traditional big to try to pair against this Rockets lineup. I just think he's going to get lost a little bit, both with like the speed that you guys are playing at now. And I do even think the increased physicality could start to trouble him. I think maybe he could have a better offensive game than we've seen some of his games be. But yeah, overall, I think that the right move is probably to go small.
If they do go small, here's my question is, I guess, kind of first off, what has been, you know, the, I guess, the go-to closing lineup that Doc has been using from the majority of the season? And do you guys see that changing up now? Obviously, with Marcus Morris, you know, as a newly acquired player, also Reggie Jackson in there. I mean, one, I guess, first to answer the first question, what do you guys picture as the closing lineup kind of moving towards the tail end of the season into the playoffs? What do you picture as Doc's go-to five guys to close out a game? And then also, how have those two guys helped out so far, Morris and Jackson, that is?
Well, they've both opened things up so much. I think we were just talking about this the other day. It's really They both bring interesting things to the Clippers fold. I think that Reggie Jackson, we've seen him benefit the team in a very specific way just due to the usage that he takes off of Lou Williams. The burden that he takes away from him, like it's just seen in his efficiency, that is Lou Williams. And it hasn't really detracted anything from his distribution game at all as well. And then Morris, you know, I've been so impressed with him buying into the role. If you look at the stats, you know, like his point totals and everything don't necessarily jump off the page, but I've been really impressed with how he's been able to sort of take that in stride, dealing with shooting, you know, obviously a much lower amount of attempts than he was getting there in New York. He does add some really solid rebounding, and playing him at the five, I do think is very interesting. We've seen it in some limited spurts. I do think in closing lineups that we will most likely see Dot going with him. Last season in the playoffs, we did see Jamichael Green in that kind of five position. And I think that overall, he likes to go a little bit smaller. I don't know. What do you think, Charles? Do you think that we could see him in lineups with Trez still at the five? Or do you think that we'll go fully into the Morris at the center kind of thing?
Someone gave us a really good question. They thought we can play Morris and Trez or Jamichael and Trez and have either Morris or Jamichael guard the five
mm-hmm.
in that situation, which I don't know if Doc would do that, but I think Doc, if for those of you who don't watch Clippers games, Zubats is banned from the fourth quarter. And so Trez pretty much plays every closing minute of the fourth quarter usually.
Which is, for all intents and purposes, a small ball five.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's going to be like sometimes lose out there, but I think against the Rockets specifically, I'd like to see like Bev, Kawhi, PG, Morris, and Trez pretty much. So effectively, Morris, Trez, yeah, effectively the starting lineup, just swapping out Zoo for Trez.
Yeah, and then depending on who has the hot hand, I think at the point guard position, you could maybe see Lou in place of Pat Bev there. But I would agree against the Rockets, like your offense is so potent that I would prefer to see a more defensive minded guard in the backcourt.
We'll have more of this preview pod coming up in just 1 second, so you guys don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, doing a crossover podcast with the guys from over at Locked On Clippers, Charles Mockler and William Updike. So is Doc the kind of coach to you guys, at least, that's going to take his chances riding the hot hand instead of sticking to a de facto go-to closing five-man lineup?
That, so now that there's continuity on the team,
barely.
Yeah, not sure. Like at this point, he has experimented more with taking Lou out and putting Shamit in, which has been interesting, and stuff like that. But I think right now it might just be a hot hand situation, really, because we're still getting our feet wet to this whole everyone being available thing. So I think he's really just kind of going with what works.
We're kind of in a situation where there's not enough data yet with a fully healthy roster where if it's working that night, I think that we'll see Doc kind of stick to it a little bit more. And then, you know, come later in the season or playoffs, I'm hopefully we'll have that a little bit more cemented. But the intention has always been to have kind of a malleable or sliding lineup, as it was coined.
As we're kind of at this, as we're recording this podcast, the Clippers actually just thoroughly beat the Oklahoma City Thunder and are now sitting, you know, just a half game ahead of the Nuggets in the 2 seed in the Western Conference. So kind of obviously there were, you know, a bunch of offseason moves for the Clippers. You bring in Kawhi, you bring in Paul George. Has the team performed above or kind of or maybe below y'all's expectations for them coming into the season to this point?
To this point, I would say above. Strictly because we're still, I think we've run out the most starting lineups of any team in the league, or we're definitely in the top five. We're at, what is it, 40?
49.
Yeah. We're playing, you know, like you said, we're second place in the West. We're undefeated when everyone's healthy, and we have the usual starting five. So I have to say it's overperformed. It's taken some adjusting just because of all the ins and outs on the roster, but I think it's really hard to be underwhelmed by this Clippers team right now on the whole.
I think for fans, there's definitely a little bit of a different perspective. I think if you remove some of the context, like if you're not watching every game, it's easy to ignore how little or like how fortunate we are the times that we do have a fully healthy roster. And I obviously that's going to contribute. I think that fans are maybe a little bit disappointed in where we're at thus far, just because of how well the other team across the hall is doing.
Well, and speaking of the other team across the hall, if you guys had to kind of looking at the West, right, just top to bottom, if you guys had to pick a team that kind of scares you the most headed into the postseason, not named the LA Lakers out of the rest of the Western Conference, which team are you guys most worried about?
If I'm being honest, because we haven't seen what it's going to look like against you guys, it's the Rockets. Because of the uncertainty,
just history.
Yeah, like there's two. Just the narrative usually isn't always on the Clippers side.
But let's not unpack that one.
Yeah. What about you? How have you felt with the small ball Rockets? How has that changed how you feel going into the playoffs?
Basically, I don't think, and I think a lot of Rockets fans will agree with me on this, they weren't going to win anything with the current or with the iteration of the team that they opened the season with that, you know, Clint Capella at the five, Russell Westbrook. We started to see Westbrook evolve and become more efficient, but he wasn't able to fully unlock his potential with Clint Capella clogging up the paint for 30 to 35 minutes a night. So you deal Clint Capella, you go all in on the small ball, Morey ball, whatever you want to call it. And it's a gutsy move. And it really, you know, it was such a huge changeup in the middle of a season. It took a lot of stones to pull the trigger on that deal, to trade your starting five and fully commit to having a starting lineup where nobody's taller than 6'7". It hasn't really been done before. And so I think it definitely upped their chances. I don't know if anybody this season other than maybe, you know, obviously the Bucks in the East and then the Lakers in the West are kind of the favorites in each conference. So, but I think it definitely gave them a greater shot come playoff time. It gives them more variance. And that's something that Daryl Morey is known for. He wants his team to have a lot of variance. I mean, that's why they shoot so many three-pointers. You know, shooting threes, that's the most volatile shot in basketball. We've seen it. Yeah. The whole 0-for-27 thing happened, right? And so that was an improbable number of misses to have in a row for a team like the Rockets. And yet we've now seemingly doubled down on that philosophy of three-pointers, layups, and dunks with the five-out small ball lineup.
How has Russell Westbrook, has he surpassed your expectations, performed as expected, especially lately?
I'd say, I think as a whole, a lot of Rockets media and Rockets fans were a little harsh on him at the start of the season, and I think that hindsight is almost always 20/20. So you look back and, you know, he didn't have the offseason to condition himself to come into the season in the usual shape that he's expecting himself to be in. You know, saying Russell Westbrook is out of shape at the start of the season is a little ridiculous because, you know, he's got like 1% body fat or something. So compared to the average population, he's, you know, shredded. But for himself, he wasn't in game shape. He hadn't played ball, you know, all summer. So he came in a little rusty. And there were moments, there were glimpses where you could see just how good he could be in a Rockets jersey, but he didn't really start to unlock this new version of Russell Westbrook until about mid-December or so when he decided to cut down on his three-point shooting. Actually, I take that back. It was the beginning of January when he cut down on his three-point attempts. He's down to around, you know, just over two a game now, and he's playing exactly how Rockets fans wanted him to play. So I'd say he has honestly surpassed my expectations to this point.
Yeah, I feel like figuring out that role was always going to take a little bit of growing time. How do you feel about your wing defenders, obviously adding Covington to the mix? How do you feel like they stack up against this forward combo of George and Leonard defensively or offensively?
You know, it's funny that you say it, or I guess phrase it in that way, right? Is because, you know, you look at it and you say, oh yeah, Robert Covington is a wing defender. Honestly, though, he's more or less Robert Covington and PJ Tucker. It's almost like in Dragon Ball Z, right, where you have the fusion dance. And, you know, you've got the two guys, they do the fusion dance and then they hit their fists together and they become this one powerful being. That's PJ Tucker and Robert Covington together are the Rockets' center. Like, they hold down the paint for the Rockets. You don't usually see, I mean, you'll see Robert Covington on the wings, you know, guarding on the perimeter off of switches and things like that, but he's also such a great weak side shot blocker, you know, with his length, with his agility, being able to, you know, simultaneously guard the three-point shot on the wing, but also kind of jump back into the paint to help out with, you know, PJ Tucker or James Harden guarding a big in the paint to come over from the weak side. And I mean, he had six games in a row with three or more blocked shots. He plays really, really big around the rim. And because of the Rockets' defensive switching scheme, it's not necessarily like you're not going to have Robert Covington and, say, PJ Tucker guarding Kawhi Leonard and Paul George all game, unfortunately. Now, I think if there's like a crunch time possession, then yeah, Robert Covington will be the guy who starts on Kawhi Leonard. But because of the Rockets' defensive scheme, it's going to be everybody guarding everybody. And that's something that doesn't get enough, or they don't get enough credit for, with James Harden and PJ Tucker being 6'5", both of them being 6'5". They're some of the best paint defenders in the league, I should say.
Absolutely.
This is going to be such an interesting test because, I mean, our defense plays team defense too, especially when you get into that Trez at the five situation, because there does have to be some coverage for his, you know, some of his shortcomings on the defensive end.
Honestly, I don't want to cut you off, but he's the guy that honestly scares me a bit more even so than just Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, like matchup wise, because the Rockets, even before committing to small ball, the Rockets historically have struggled with those, you know, 6'8 to 6'10 high motor forwards. Like, it always seems like those types of players destroy the Rockets inside. And I feel like T-Rez is bound to have a really good game against this lineup.
How do you think, just overall outcome, what do you think is going to happen?
I think that if they can come, and here's the thing, is the Rockets have this really terrible knack for playing down to and playing up to their opponents. I mean,
we have the same situation over in
same
Los
problem.
Angeles.
Yeah.
it's frustrating because I feel like maybe if you go around the entire league, like everybody feels that way about their team, but then you do have teams like the, you know, the Bucks and the Lakers who seem to always take care of business against the, you know, the under 500 team. So maybe it's not every team.
Yeah.
I think that as long as they come out with the right energy and intensity and they don't let up off the gas. I mean, we've had the Rockets have had some really impressive wins over the last month or so, you know, wins against the Utah Jazz, two wins against the Celtics, against the Lakers, but they've also had some disappointing losses against the Phoenix Suns and most recently, notably, the New York Knicks. And, you know, those losses, you can mainly cite energy. I think that if they do a decent job of containing Montrez and not letting him feast in the paint, as well as not letting the Clippers get easy buckets off of like slipping screens and stuff like that, then they have a shot as long as their shooting doesn't completely abandon them, which it basically has for like two games in a row. They shot poorly against the Celtics, and then they also shot poorly for the better part of the game against the Knicks until the fourth quarter. How are you guys feeling going into this one?
I'm feeling confident just coming off the streak of games that we've had. I'm really curious in this one to see how like fouls and free throw attempts turn out for both teams, because the whistle could really go either way in this one. Overall, I feel pretty confident. I'm hoping that we see some efficiency from the small ball lineup from the Clippers early. I'm assuming that Zoo is going to get, I don't know, what do you think about this, Charles? He's going to get like a little bit of like just a ceremonious start. Like I don't really see
it'll
him.
Be the Gortat start where he'll play like maybe 20 minutes.
Well, okay, I love calling it the Gortat start. That's incredible.
But I'm hoping we can come away from this one with a win. I'm feeling pretty confident, but once again, I'm riding high on our 5-game win streak and just a few games of a fully healthy roster.
I think the biggest thing for me is going to be bench defense is going to be huge. It really kind of hinges on that. You know,
Didn't look great tonight.
There's not a lot of teams that can go kind of, you know, obviously star power for star power with the Rockets or the Clippers, but they can do it to each other. And the complementary pieces are very complementary and work well. So the bench is going to be huge. If the bench defense can't, you know, put up some decent resistance, it's going to be tougher for the Clippers, but
they do have they have a tendency to go bucket for bucket. It'll happen.
Yeah.
We'll have the final segment of this Locked On Rockets and Locked On Clippers crossover podcast in just one moment, so don't go anywhere. And we're back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, discussing the upcoming matchup between the Rockets and Clippers. So I found it interesting earlier this season, you know, you would think that in the matchups where they had Kawhi and PG both available, you would think that one of those two guys would match up on James Harden and be Harden's primary defender. But in basically every game earlier this season, Patrick Beverley was actually the primary defender on Harden for, stretches of the game. Where do you guys think defensively, how are the Clippers going to line up their defenders on Westbrook and Harden? Who are going to be the primary defenders on those guys?
I think Bev's going to be on Westbrook most likely, because now, as kind of Doc had a quote like a week or so ago, he said, now it's time that Kawhi can kind of start guarding, other team's primary ball handlers and stuff like that. And with the way things are going in Houston, it might just be they'll figure it out in terms of whose kind of game it is between a Harden or a Westbrook game, I think, maybe, and stick Kawhi on whoever that happens to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of like keeping Patrick Beverley on ball. I just feel like that's what he does best. So whoever is the primary ball handler, on that given possession, I would like to see Bev on him with Kawhi. On whichever one of Harden or Westbrook is off ball. But I think that they're going to throw, thus far in the season we've seen, they throw a lot of different looks at Harden. So we could possibly see some Paul George minutes on him, which I'm a little nervous about.
Why are you nervous about Paul George on Harden?
Paul George is still getting his legs back defensively, I feel like. It's been better. He had two steals tonight, and he looks a little bit more confident, but he's still kind of he's going to bite on a lot of fakes. I think I don't love that matchup. I don't know. Do you think I'm wrong here, Charles? I don't love that matchup on Harden for Paul George.
He's got some rust on him still a little bit.
He's overeager.
He's a little overeager. I would rather... I would not want to see him really on either Harden or Westbrook. I think Bev and Kawhi are going to be doing the brunt of the work on this one, which, hey, I'm perfectly fine with that.
So kind of as we're just kind of wrapping up this thing, I've got a couple more questions that I want to get y'all's opinions on. So what has been the biggest surprise to you guys this season about this Clippers team?
Oh, man. Aside from the recent smattering of Amir Coffey minutes after the Mo Harkless trade, I think it would be that we've dealt with lineup situations for the past two seasons up to this point and throughout this whole season. So it's kind of, I guess I'm surprised that it's mostly that Doc is still able to keep things together with a brand new roster after yet another blockbuster trade, and that the trajectory of the plan that everyone kind of bought into is seemingly on track as well as it could be going given everything. So basically, I guess I'm surprised in true Clippers fashion at how well things seem to be going.
I just piggybacking off of that, I think the biggest surprise to me has been with that, the Reggie Jackson addition. I feel like the bench has gotten better, and I didn't think that that was really probable, but I feel like we've gotten a 10-man playoff rotation now where there's some questions defensively, obviously, but I think that they've upped the offense and that, you know, like the Lou and Trez pick and roll was one of the best offenses in and of itself last season. I think they've found a way to kind of keep that from hitting a lull and kind of surprise defenses. So I'm surprised that this thing that I kind of thought would take a little bit of a regression to the means is actually adding something exciting and new and possibly even better, dare I say it.
Has Landry Shamet like lost his role within the Clippers, or is he still kind of like the ninth, 10th man on the team?
We were just talking about that because he did not get a lot of run in this Oklahoma Thunder game. He was getting kind of sought out on defense. I think he's a little lower than he was before, mostly Definitely. Because how good everything's looked with Marcus starting especially, and with how good Reggie's been.
With how good Reggie has fit, it's definitely pushed him back a little bit further in the rotation.
It's odd. I will say it's a little surprising. He's a 40%, you know, he's an elite three-point shooter.
And he is still a guy that, you know, Doc does have specific actions drawn up for. Like, there are, I mean, some of it is obviously stemming from when J.J. Redick was on the team, but there are just specific actions that are for Landry Shamet that this team, you know, knows to run and can rely on. So I think that we could see that change. I'm pretty sure right now, still in the regular season, I mean, it's safe to say we're still feeling out the Reggie Jackson thing, and returns have been, you know, better than expected thus far. So we'll see going forward, but he definitely has in the immediate term fallen back a little bit in the rotation.
So are you guys saying that because Landry Shamet's main skill is just like elite shooting and, you know, kind of just maybe not subpar in other areas, but just, and it may be possibly a defensive liability, that's kind of the main reasons that he's going to kind of fall back in the rotation a little bit?
Yeah, it's his biggest detriment is his ball handling. He can't throw pick and roll passes, and I mean
the decision making isn't great. And when he's handling the ball,
and we've tried this year to see it. It was kind of hyped up in the preseason and stuff like that. I watched way too many college highlights of Landry Shamet handling the ball too much and really believed in it. And then you saw it, and it was like, no, this can't really happen on a regular basis in any way.
Well, just for all the Rockets fans listening, I just want to say there's some parallels there maybe between Landry Shamet and Ben McLemore. So I'm feeling validated once again. So this is an ongoing thing for me on Locked On Rockets, where I have these major concerns about Ben McLemore and whether or not he's going to get consistent playoff burn, because he is, you know, at times detrimental on defense, and offensively he is, you know, an elite shooter. He's been one of the best 3-point shooters in the NBA to this point in the season. But we've seen it before, where when you are a shooter and if that's all you bring to the table, sometimes you do take a backseat to players who are more well-rounded in other aspects of the game, like defense, maybe just size at times, you know, things like that. So I feel a little bit vindicated. I appreciate that, you guys. And kind of my final question that I have is, right, we had this recent Locked On poll across the entire network for all the hosts to chime in. And Kawhi Leonard came in ranked as the third best player in the league. So the first best player that everybody ranked was Giannis Antetokounmpo. LeBron James number two. Kawhi clocked in at number three. And James Harden at number four. And then Anthony Davis at number five. But obviously we want to focus on Kawhi Leonard and James Harden. How do you guys feel about this poll? Do you guys, who did you guys vote for? Let's go with that.
So, I mean, I had Kawhi at number one as a complete homer pick to try and sway the vote a little bit.
I also had Kawhi at one.
But realistically,
wow, disappointed in you guys. I didn't even, I toned back my homerism in the vote,
so
believe it
funny.
Or not.
So all the ones
the
below
two-way
that.
Play, I just feel like the two-way play, I understand that the availability hasn't been there, but it's still been impressive.
All my ones below that were rational. So, like, realistically, I would go, I mean, Giannis is number one right now. I would put Kawhi at two. Absolutely.
That's fair.
And then I'd go LeBron, Harden, and then I guess AD at five.
So I kind of feel like AD is not in the realm of the other names.
Oh, wow.
The other four names that have been mentioned. He has been great, but he does have like his own drawbacks, which
can't shoot.
Yeah, can't shoot. We don't need to get into
a paper
that.
Cut.
But
we'll sideline him for a week.
Yeah,
I think that's a pretty fair ranking. I would probably go Giannis one. You know, if we're doing it honestly, I guess objectively rather, Giannis one, Kawhi two. I would maybe put Harden above LeBron, but it's difficult. Like it's difficult. It's different games.
You know, that's basically where that's where I was at. Is so when I did my vote, I was trying to tone back the homerism just a little bit. And so I voted Giannis number one, I voted Kawhi number two, and I voted Harden number three. I put Braun at four. And I don't actually think I put AD at
Braun
number five.
At four,
I can't remember
really
who I put at number five. I don't think it was AD though.
Yeah, AD, I mean, yeah, that's for a different day, but I don't think he's up in that top five.
I don't know. This is a conversation for another time, but yeah, to me, he's like kind of not in the echelon of those four dudes, but you know, that's whatever.
How have you felt about the media's treatment of Harden? Like, how do you feel about having such a polarizing player in your team? Because we kind of have the load management situation with Kawhi, which people don't understand.
We get some boring narratives.
But how are you, how is it being a fan of Harden this year?
I touched on this in a podcast right after the All-Star break, saying that it's a little refreshing to not have to wake up every single day and, like, you know, my to-do list in the morning is, you know, wake up, brush teeth, you know, put on clothes, get ready for work. Oh, did I defend Harden on Twitter yet for the MVP campaign? Nope, didn't do that. Okay, let's jump on Twitter really quick and flex these Twitter fingers. It's kind of refreshing not having to worry about that this season specifically, because obviously he had his MVP campaign 17-18. Then he was trying to do the repeat last season, and it was him and Giannis head-to-head pretty much the entire season. So that's been refreshing to not have to worry about that element of the season. But then you've also got, you know, it's really a never-ending spree with James Harden. I feel like, and I don't think this is just the Houstonian in me, I think this is like a legitimate thing that you ask fans of other fan bases and they would probably agree with. I think the NBA loves to hate on Harden more than any other superstar in the league. He's the most polarizing star in the league. Would you guys agree?
100%. And I'm on the, I mean, you know, like the Clippers, and we have our own tortured history with the Rockets.
Yeah.
but objectively, I would fall on the side of defending James Harden. What do you think, Chuck?
I agree that he gets a bunch of
undue hate,
for sure. I think LeBron gets a bunch of undue hate as well.
That's absurd.
That's
no,
not people hate.
Not compared
hate
to the LeBron. Amount of love.
Let me explain. People also love James Harden, but I guess not as much.
People in Houston love James Harden. And
yeah, people
that
Houston
are fans of the Rockets. I can't even limit it to just Houston. We've got thousands of listeners all across the world, so I can't just limit it to Houston. But, you know, like a big chunk of them are Houstonians. So
yeah, that's fair. I like when James Harden game is flowing without the free throws, but I do not fault him for being able to find loopholes and twist the rules. That part of his game,
it's
I
not
respect.
Even twisting the rule.
What
get out of here!
Say?
It's in the
I'm
rules.
Giving him respect. He's like a baseball player in that he uses the rules to his advantage as much as possible.
That's fair.
Respect.
Hey, well, I appreciate the objective takes on James Harden. It's refreshing coming from, you know, non-Rockets homers. It's a nice thing to hear.
Yeah, for sure. Glad we can help out with.
I'm a fan. He should have won MVP last year.
All right.
Oh, hey. Okay, I'll take that. Hey, that's a pleasant note to end on for all my listeners. All right. Well,
this year it's definitely Giannis, but last year it should have been him.
All right. Well, hey, I appreciate you guys taking the time to record this pod with me. Anything you guys want to hit on before we get out of here?
Nothing much. I'm not sure how many Locked On Rockets listeners would want to listen to the Locked On Clippers podcast, but if you'd like to, come hang out. It's a pretty good time, and I kind of hope we don't see each other in the finals or in the playoffs at any point.
Yeah, I'm not sure if my heart could take it. And then, you know, I always usually plug my Twitter handle. So if you guys are interested in seeing things from, you know, a Rockets standpoint with a bit of, you know, Rockets bias behind it, sure, I can admit
absolutely.
That. Absolutely. My Twitter handle's @JTGatlin. And then obviously the show is on Twitter @LockedOnRockets. And you guys want to go ahead and plug your stuff?
Yeah, you can find us. I'm @CharlesMockler.
I'm @WillUpdyke. And we are collectively @LockedOnClips.
Yeah. And then we're on iTunes, Deezer, all that good stuff.
All right. Thanks again, guys. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you.
All righty. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed kind of part one of our two-part preview series headed into what will be the biggest game of the season against the LA Clippers. And part two will be soon to follow. So as always, hope you guys enjoyed what we put out here today, and we look forward to having you back very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.